in those early days, it was a real battle to do something other than what I was supposed to do, because I wasn't seen as a face that rock music should have. My name is Skin, and I'm the lead singer and songwriter of multi-million selling British rock band Skunk Anansie, and I'm also a DJ. As one of the few black women in the rock industry, I passionately believe that music is a force that can break down barriers and move beyond stereotypes about race and gender.
The biggest surprise, even after 30 years of filmmaking, is people's expectations of what you can actually do compared to what they think you can do. I'm Gurinder Chadha. I'm a writer, director, producer. The wide on that camera is lovely with the clouds. I have spent my career making films about people that look like me, who are underrepresented on the screens and often on the margins of our industry.
Cards!
The whole reason I came into making films was because I wanted to challenge the fact that we were absent from the screen and therefore absent from history.
For me, writing about politics or writing about political things really was just writing about my personal experience.
We are the recorders of our voices as people of the diaspora, and because they're there, they can't be taken away. So you have said that music has no boundaries. Obviously, you were a bit of an anomaly at that time. No one could put you in a category, because you would be jazzy, you would be ballady, you would be punky, you'd be metal-y, you'd be everything, right? And did you find that you were able to channel some of your political sort of anger into your music?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, the way I always talk about music and politics and why we do why some of our songs are political is because, for me, the most effective political songs come from personal experience. Like, I saw a little tiny swastika halfway up a wall, and in my head, I'm like, who put little baby swastika on the wall? And that was our very first little single, because the question is, who put little baby swastika on the wall? It looked like it was the first one. Could it be more than 4 years old? And in that way, I talked about the rise of fascism and the rise of white supremacy at that time. And some of those issues that I'd grown up with, because in Brixton, they would come down metal bars
and
just beat black people up where they could see them.
Yeah.
And then there'd be a whole big fight in the middle of the street.
Yeah.
And so it came from that. And for me, writing about politics or writing about political things really was just writing about my personal experience first. One of the things I'm really interested about is the fact that you've done some hugely popular movies. And at the same time, the message of your work, it remains strong and prevalent in everything that you do. Mm. I mean, how have you managed to stay radical in the mainstream?
Just by being a director in our business is a radical thing in itself.
The mere presence.
The mere presence, you know. And whenever I write a film and then try and get it made, if the lead is a person of colour, it's always a struggle. You know, it would be much easier for me to make films about white people. But, of course, that's not what I'm going to do, because the whole reason I came into making films was because I wanted to challenge the fact that we were absent from the screen and therefore absent from history. So in many ways now, I think that the films I've made over the last 30 years have been a recording of our life and our presence in Britain. So my first film, I'm British, but that really was just me wanting to express the fact that, you know, we come from a long history and a long relationship with Britain.
Yeah.
It's not just our parents coming off the boat, as it were. We're here because
you
were there.
The whole colonial,
exactly.
The empire.
Exactly. And then with Barge on the Beach, I made a decision that I wanted to make commercial films. I didn't want to make art house films, because I felt art house films were only going to be seen by academics and certain people who are all in the same circle.
Yeah.
And I wanted to create films that would be seen by everybody, because I wanted to show our stories, basically. And so with Barge on the Beach, I decided to tackle black and Asian relationships. And as well, you know, which was taboo at the time.
I mean, I can only imagine the arguments and the full force of you to get those movies made and to get those topics, keep those topics there, not get watered down.
Yeah, I mean, even Bend It Like Beckham, you know, my most successful film.
Love that movie so much. Love that
movie. But it was such a struggle to get made. I mean, it took 3 years and people just didn't believe that it was commercial or that anyone beyond other Indians who might like football would be interested in it. But as I keep saying, that film is not about football. Mm. You know, that is a film about racism and what the father went through and how he's trying to protect his daughter from racism, whereas the daughter's saying, you know what, I got to go out and fight it myself and do my own stuff, you know.
I think sometimes the story that gets told is how hard it is and how unsupported by our parents. But at the same time, there's loads of parents that are incredibly supportive.
Yeah, well, that was based on my dad.
And just want their kids to do the best.
Those are my parents. My mum was just obsessed with me learning how to cook Indian food throughout my childhood. But that was my dad, and in some ways that was me. Mm. But what was important about that film was the fact that it was a Sikh family.
Yeah.
And the film came out just after 9/11. Mm. And it, I think, I really do believe that it, you know, it did a lot in terms of race relations, certainly in Britain. I remember before the film was a hit, I was at a screening in Manchester and I'd gone up to introduce the film. And, you know, it was a really interesting audience because there weren't that many Asians there. But the people were there, I noticed there were families who'd bought their own crisps and things, you know, because people were poor, right? And anyway, they all sat there watching the film. And then after, people were smiling at me. And then this one woman, I'll never forget her, English woman, she came up to me. She was wearing white shirt and white stilettos. And she said to me, you think you've made a comedy, haven't you? And I said, well, I try and use humour, you know. But she said, you don't know what you've done. What you've done for people around here. Because previous, they just had the Oldham riots where there'd been conflict between the Pakistani community and the English community, and you know, they'd been at loggerheads there. And she said, what your film taught us is that everyone wants the best for their kids.
Exactly.
Doesn't matter who you are, everyone wants the best for their kids. And that woman has stayed with me because, in a way, that is what I was trying to do, you know, with my film. And I just thought, wow, if I never make another film again...
You've done that.
But I did go on and make a film that was a very hard film for me to make, and it was called Viceroy's House. Mm. And it was about the partition of India.
Yeah.
So I wanted to move a bit away from England.
Which is, I mean, people really don't know a lot about that and why it was done and how it was done.
Yeah, 1947 was independence, and then partition was happening in 47. Yeah. You know, basically, Britain, before Britain left, divided India and created Pakistan. Yeah. And in my film, I put forward a theory as to why that happened, because it was to do with the beginning of the Cold War and American and British interests. The film was quite a tragic film because it was about refugees and what had happened to my ancestors and my grandparents. Mm. And making it as a British person was also interesting because it is a British film, and I did have the Mountbattens as well. And most of the films about partition made in India, you know, are very violent and very angry, you know, rightly so, you know. But being a British filmmaker, I had to take
different energy to it.
Different, right? And also, I think the other thing is being a mother as well. By that point, I'd had my children. So that maternal thing came in where I just felt like enough already, enough hatred and pain and division. And so I tried to make a very healing film.
In film and music and writing and all the creatives, the point is to try and get things to be better. And sometimes you have to highlight that in ways that make people feel very, very uncomfortable. And certainly within some of the songs that I've done that are kind of sweary, you know, it's because it's like, this is... You know, this is our reality, and some of them are negative, so that people can try and understand how it is from our perspective.
Yes.
And I think, in terms of being radical, in terms of making it mainstream, you know, if the songs aren't hooky, a little bit of poppiness to it, then you'll kind of end up preaching to the converted.
Yes.
Who actually aren't the ones that you're trying to reach. You know, you're trying to reach a broader spectrum of people so you can actually, these songs and this message can get out there and can have a really strong effect. It just, when people feel uncomfortable. They call it radical. Like black women, they think we're aggressive because we have a strong point of view, or because we're going to stand there and demand our space there. I actually stand by the fact that I don't think any of Skunk and Nancy's songs are that radical or that extreme. Some of them are cry for help, and some of them are kind of like, look what's going on. What's wrong with you? Can you not see? Always trying to find a different way to express something that has been expressed since Bob Dylan, you know, since Marvin Gaye, you know, since Public Enemy. There's so many bands, so many artists that have written things in political ways. How do you touch people? And I think, again, it's just to find a unique and a personal way to talk about
Absolutely.
Issues.
My last film, Blinded by the Light, was based on a memoir by Safraz Manzoor, who grew up in England, just sort of 25 miles out of Luton, an industrial town. And it's based around Javed, a kid who's feeling really kind of at sea in Luton with his parents, with the National Front. And so many people have come up to me and said how much they cried through that film because it sort of expresses something that you can't put down. It expresses our reality. And because there's so few people who do that in our industries and in the world of art, if you like, you know, when you see it there and people respond to it, it's an emotional experience.
I mean, I think the one thing about Bruce Springsteen, he's a wonderful translator of emotions.
Yes.
I find that he's... the difference between me or Bruce Springsteen is that is how we translate it.
Well, I remember when I showed him the film, I was very nervous, but at the end of the film, he came up to me and he gave me a big hug and a kiss, and he said, thank you for looking after me so beautifully. So that was kind of nice. But the ultimate thing really is that when we were doing it, when we were creating, we were struggling and we were angry. We were like, why can't we do this? Why can't we? Where's our space? Let us have our space.
Yeah.
And we spent a lot of energy doing that. But now looking back and seeing the work and like you writing the book, you know, I have this tremendous sense of achievement. Because actually, we did. We were subversive. We made inroads,
and
whilst
and still are.
Absolutely,
no,
of course not. But the thing is to just acknowledge for a minute that we are the recorders of our voices as people of the diaspora, and because they're there, they can't be taken away.
Exactly. I mean, in those early days, when I'm you know, I'm this skinny black girl lead singer of a rock band, and everybody's looking at me like, really? Really? Because the rock, I think rock music is based on authenticity.
Yeah.
It's got to be real, it's got to be true, it's got to be cool. And so in those days, people would look at me and think, well, it can't be authentic, it can't be real, because this isn't the face of rock music that we want to have. So it's like a big boulder, and you're like handing me your boulder of racism for me to carry.
Yes.
And my attitude was like, oh, no, you can have that back.
That's exactly.
You can have that back, because my shoulders are clean and clear. You know, I don't want to carry that. I have to carry the weight of your racism.
Yes, that's so true.
It's like I finally got to this place of joy and happiness, you know, at 26 years old, it's quite late, really, signing to a record label. And I was really happy. I was like, I'm front of bang. I'm finally not being a backup singer, which is what I was kind of being pushed into. And then that was my approach to it. And I always say this when I work with kids, I always say, just don't take it on into your own spirit.
Yes.
And the book, when I was writing the words, I was picturing a young girl, like a young version of myself. What would she want to be told? Oh, the end of the book is all about, you know, the lessons I've learned, the things I've been told. And that was one of the major things I wanted to say to kids now. It's like, you know, you're fine. They have the problem.
Absolutely.
Don't carry other people's weight.
Because
that's the minute you get weighed down, you stop what you're doing and they've won.
Exactly. And my point of that, where I learned that, was in 2002 when Bend It Like Beckham came out in America, and the New York Times described the film and said, this isn't the authentic voice of Asians living in Britain today.
Because that's because the idea they have of Asians in, you know, is not playing football.
How would he have the gall as a New Yorker bloke
talking about
to say that to an Asian woman who's just made a film about her own upbringing. I mean, I talk about it because I think he's probably quite mortified that he wrote that, and he's quite mortified that I repeat it quite a lot. But that was a real turning point for me, because I suddenly thought, wow, you can't win. Don't try and win. Don't try and be on their level.
Yeah.
Be on your own level.
And don't take it on.
And don't take it on. And therefore, I think art and what we create is really about ourselves.
I mean, I think the simple, most difficult thing that's happening now is that we grew up in an environment where you didn't have to read those words until you picked up a newspaper.
Yes.
Well, social media, you cannot get away from people's opinions.
Yes.
It's just in your face, punching you in your face non-stop. No wonder some of the kids have having so much difficulty, so many mental issues, dealing with this entourage of negativity and people's negative. How can you carry that weight? I mean, I would just be like, I can just leave the room when you come to me with your nonsense. Well, you can't leave the room because the room is in your pocket and you carry it like a negative weight with you wherever you are. So
the answer is meditation. The answer is spend 5 minutes a day just meditating about your own strengths, who you are, what your purpose is in life, what you're here to do, what you're here to create, who you love, who loves you. If you do, just do that, people, and then everything else. Any haters out there, you know.
I was going to say the answer is just put the phone down the toilet. You know. I'm also a strong believer in just not reading it. Because, I mean, even though we've been in the business this long time, you still have quite a thin skin for things.
You do.
Do you think it's, like, easier now? Do you think, because things seem to be more diverse, you know, do you think it's easier to make your films?
I think it's just more subtle. I think it's just harder to spot.
Yeah, that's right. They're not going to come up to you and say, we're not making this film because you're a black Asian writer.
Yeah.
Like, we're not sure our audience is going to like it.
Yeah, it'll just be more, you know, can we think about some different casting?
Can we add another story
as a way in for the audience? It'll just be different words.
Talking of the audience, see what I did there? I think, is it question time again?
Yes.
Hi. My name's Natasha. My question is for Gurinder. I was wondering, do you write your characters and stories with complete freedom, or do you feel maybe unfairly that they come to be representatives and in that sense carry the burden of portraying South Asian communities positively, like defending the cultures or breaking stereotypes for your audiences? And how do you cope with that if you do feel it?
Well, I think early on, I think I did feel what we call the burden of representation. But you just have to be authentic, I think. But as the years go past, you realise there are, as a writer and as a director, there are films that you want to make and there are films that you don't, you know. I don't necessarily like how on certain TV station in England, there's always stories about, you know, how I was killed by my father or my brother type dramas because, you know, they're so reductionist, I think, you know. So what I try and do is counteract what's already out there. That's not to say don't hide from serious issues, but try and create three-dimensional characters who are dealing with stuff, but I try and do it from a way that doesn't make us the victim. And I think that's the problem when you're working in a world and an industry that has so many ideas of who we are and what we represent, i.e. backwards and not educated or whatever. My job is always to try and redress that. But what I also try and do is create characters that my own community can recognise and feel as authentic, but also are universal. Because, you know, film is seen by everyone around the world, you know. So it's important for me that, you know, that you find that thing that makes us universal as well as specific.
Hello, my name is Veronica. I'm North African. So my question is, as a young student, when in your beginnings in your career, who was the person who you look up to and you got inspired by?
Well, shall I start?
Yeah, you can.
I think the person whose voice I think meant so much to me in her writing was Maya Angelou. I mean, Christ, the bravery and the poetry, but then this amazing ability to deal with all the crosses she had to bear and come out shining. To me, she remains a huge influence.
For me, the first record I ever bought actually was a Nina Simone record. And I took it home and I wasn't allowed to... I didn't get to listen to it for a few months because the record player was in the nice room at the front of the house that my mum used to lock. You know, the good room, the smart room.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember I sat there and I played it 10 times in a row.
Yeah.
And then I followed Nina Simone's career for my whole life and I actually ended up meeting her at Fantastic. Nelson Mandela's 80th birthday party. We sang Happy Birthday, you know.
Fantastic.
And I remember sitting down in the hotel bar afterwards and just hung out with her all night. And I remember saying to her, you know, you were the first record I ever bought. And, you know, just in terms of her as an artist, the voice, she didn't start singing until she was 19 years old because she was trained as a classical pianist and she couldn't get into the classical school that she wanted to get into. So she ended up singing in bars and, you know. And later on, she became very political, wrote some incredibly poignant political songs. And as an artist, she's the artist that I keep going back to because there's always something more there. So for me, I would say that's probably the artist that has most inspired me.
Hello.
Hi, my name is Lindy Ware. So I really, really wanted to just hear your thoughts on what can be done to achieve a greater depth of anti-racist decolonial work in educational spaces, you know, all the way from early years through to university.
I mean, I would say, first and foremost, to not put up with it. You know, I think that there's... before Black Lives Matter, even, which is just a recent thing, there was a culture of, like, oh, we'll just deal with this, we'll just let this one go, and then the next time we'll try and slowly, slowly... And I think now some of the most effective things that we can do is just shut it down. If we see racist behaviour or we want to have a conversation about that, to actually expose it and to talk about it. I don't think necessarily we need to weaponise it. I don't think we need to, you know, have a thing of destroying people and cancelling people. I just think that it's good to highlight it, deal with it, put it forward, make it in the front of the conversation so people can understand what's wrong, because sometimes people don't really get it straight away. And there's a lot of unconditioning that has to happen. So I think to do it in a productive, positive, loving way. But I think, yeah, there's so much... The rise of racism and fascism and white supremacy, it's going up and up and up. And I think it's not the time to kind of almost, you know, tap around it and do it delicately. I think, you know, it's time we need to spot it and shut it down. And so that people can see that something's going to happen. And it makes people kind of think twice before they say or they act or they do certain things. But I do think, as I said, it has to be in an open conversation, a positive way, not just like jumping and pouncing someone in a very aggressive way, because sometimes people just make mistakes or they just don't understand or they're just not there yet.
And in addition to what Skin is saying in terms of the teaching, I think it's up to educators now to start using the materials that are properly representative of the subjects that you're teaching. And I think that in terms of film, there are so many wonderful films that are worth going back and revisiting, like Battle of Algiers, for example, you know, where you go back and you talk about the issues raised in the film and how pertinent they are, for example, to today and what's going on in France today. So I think that film too, film made by filmmakers from different backgrounds about their own history is also a great way to combat prejudice and racism.
Well, is this... been the most wonderful, incredible experience to talk to you.
Me too, Skin. It's just been wonderful. I'm sad we haven't met in the past, but it's been wonderful to share all these experiences of our upbringings and time in London, even though we weren't miles apart from each other.
Exactly.
It's so interesting to hear the world from your perspective.
We're so connected by a time and a period. It's like some of your memories and music that you've talked about and some of your influences. I remember that too. That was this time. So I've got to go and sing now in a recording studio. So I'm quite inspired to,
excellent,
to have this feeling of this moment that we've been able to talk.
We come from a time, a generation, when What mattered in art was to be radical. Today, what the hell does radical mean?
Art is being used to make a satisfaction of the bourgeois society for the rich and the powerful.
Picasso, in his late life, said something wonderful. Painting is not decoration for your living room. Painting is war.